last case for today, Schmidt versus Ottawa Medical Center. Mr. Garrison.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Gary Garrison. I represent Dr. Richard Schmidt. This is an appeal from an order of the district court granting summary judgment. It is our position that the district court determined that Dr. Schmidt was, as a shareholder of the corporation and as a prior member of the board of directors, that he was, as a matter of law, an employer, not an employee entitled to the protection of the anti-discrimination, age discrimination legislation. Generally, it's our position that the court...
How old is he?
Dr. Schmidt is 65. The dispute here is about Dr. Schmidt's compensation. That is the underlying claim. We did not get to the underlying claim. The appellee and the district court relied on EEOC versus Dowd. We believe that EEOC versus Dowd is distinguishable on two factual matters with regard to this. We can see that Dr. Schmidt was in fact a shareholder and was previously a member of the board of directors. The differences with regard to this corporation and the facts in EEOC versus Dowd is that in order to get subject matter jurisdiction, the members of the partners in Dowd needed to be counted in order to get to the jurisdictional limit.
But
if you're right, were there any employers here, or was everybody an employee?
In this particular case, I think the facts turned on a little bit more, another set of facts with regard to...
At the very most, there's eight employers here.
That's correct.
Entity consists of eight people, including Schmidt, at the most.
At the most.
But if you're right and Schmidt is pulled out of there, can the other ones all be pulled out and then we have no...
And I would say that would turn on the factual relationship that they had with the corporation.
Well, aren't you really, though, arguing for something very formalistic, like it's the corporate entity that's the employer and... All of these people, whether they're on the board of directors or not, are employees?
Well, in some respect I am, in some respect I'm not, because the corporation decided to establish their relationship by entering into a contractual agreement with Dr. Schmidt in which they determined that he was an employee.
But let me call to your attention, I'm not sure if you've had a chance to see it yet, but on October the 24th, this court decided a case called EEOC against Sidley Austin, Brown, and Wood, in which we reiterate the functional approach of Dowd and cite a variety of things. We acknowledge the Supreme Court's grant of certiorari in the Clackamas gastroenterology case, but we're trying to look functionally at what's going on, and it seems to me in this instance, if one looks functionally at the role of these individuals who are on the board of directors, this small group of the eight shareholder physicians, they're running the place, and he's one of them. Doesn't that make him more like an employer than an employee?
Except I would say that if you look at the contract, he's not being compensated here, and the dispute is not about compensation as a member of the board of directors. The dispute is not being compensated as a shareholder. The dispute is whether over his compensation as a physician treater, which is where he has the employment contract. Additionally, they have maintained, as this entity, a right to control what patients he sees and whether or not he sees patients. They have retained, as this entity, the corporate entity, the ability to gain all the income received from his treating the patients.
But the same would be true of an eight-person management committee of a partnership, wouldn't it? I mean, partnerships very frequently will have a committee that decides what to do with the receipts when they come in, and maybe partner A will focus on tax and partner B will focus on litigation and so on. That doesn't mean they aren't partners. It doesn't mean they don't each have a voice in the governance of the firm along the lines of that footnote in Justice Powell's concurring opinion in Hishon against King and Spaulding. And this kind of an enterprise, what this medical group is, looks a lot like a partnership.
It does, and it started out as a partnership, and I will concede that fact. But that partnership decided in the course of it in 1976 to become incorporated and obtain the benefits of incorporation, the limits on liability that existed with regard to that.
Mm-hmm.
They then took the step further of entering into a contractual agreement with the partners, the same type of contracts that they entered into with the three employee physicians that are non-shareholders to the corporation and non-members of the board of directors. They sought that degree of control as the corporate entity. And I guess what I'm saying is that in making that functional determination, I think one of the things that the court should look at is what the parties decided that they wanted to do and how they developed their functional relationship with each other. It's not just simply that they functioned as members of a board of directors and control the corporation. There is independent judgment that's exercised by Dr. Schmidt in his capacity as a treater, and the contract says he has the right to do that. And they also say that if we don't like the judgment you're using with regard to patients, we have the right to take those patients away from you.
He receives income as a member of the board of directors and as a shareholder?
No.
No?
No.
The only income he receives is the
that's correct.
Contracted...
And that's the heart of the dispute. And that, in some respect, I think that's where we see that doubt is distinguishable, in that as a partnership, you share in the overall income of the business and what partnerships share, again, adopted by your partnership agreement. Here, this is a hybrid. They've decided as a group to protect themselves from liability, individual liability, by adopting the corporate form. They've also chosen to enter into a contractual agreement with individual members of the corporation's physicians to compensate them pursuant to an independent contract that they've entered into. They could, and in fact they have subsequent to this, sought to compensate the shareholder physicians pursuant to a shareholder agreement. Dr. Schmidt refused to enter into that.
Yeah, these are the agreements he didn't want. Well, can't the partnership, though, I mean, if it were regular law partnership, couldn't they vote on a compensation arrangement whereby each partner got a fixed amount of money for that particular year? They project what their billings are going to be, and they say, well, instead of, you know, saying you're going to get X percent, we're just going to say flat C. It wouldn't mean it wasn't a partnership, would it?
No. And I'm not conceding that. What I'm saying is that in making the functional determination, I think the intent of the parties and the agreements that they sought to reach with each other as an entity and as individuals needs to be taken into consideration. And that's what they did. And the dispute has arisen at this particular point over his compensation as an employee. Again, it's a label that they called him an employee, but the fact of the matter is that is the source of his compensation and where the dispute is. And that's where we see that doubt is distinguishable.
Thank you. Mr. Reagan?
Thanks, sir. Wish I could be like the last guy who came from that table with no notes, but I can't. Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Mike Reagan. I have the privilege in this case to appear before you representing the Appalee Ottawa Medical Center, Inc. Every shareholder in this case, every shareholder doctor has an employment agreement. They are all the same, with the exception of Dr. Schmidt's, only because he refuses to sign the new one. And the record documents that fact that the board voted to have everybody sign updated ones, which were identical just as the prior ones were identical, and he simply refuses to do it.
So the formulation of whatever the agreement may be at a particular time is done by the board of directors acting collectively?
It is done by, and the record in this case shows that all of the shareholders voted on the compensation plan. And in fact, Dr. Schmidt, the plaintiff in this case, was on a compensation committee and was an officer at the time they agreed to hire a compensation consultant who said, change your plan and let's do this.
Do the bylaws have some sort of, you know, majority rules provision, or is that just understood?
I don't know, Your Honor. It's the way it operates, but it's either understood or there, and I simply don't know. But he voted to hire the compensation consultant. He worked with him, that's in the record, and voted in favor of that new compensation plan, which has been amended three times since, and three times since then it has been put to a vote of all of the shareholders, and Dr. Schmidt has indeed voted on those occasions. The last time he voted against the plan, because he obviously doesn't like it, it applies equally to everyone. We're not here to talk about discrimination, but in terms of who's running the place, which was Judge Wood's suggestion earlier, you take your gross receipts and you subtract from it, you take each physician's gross receipts and you subtract from it an equal share of allocated overhead, and that becomes your salary or what you're paid, your compensation. So that's the way the system works. I did spend the weekend studying the court's very recent opinion. Yes, to my great enjoyment. And I would say,
spinning the tail on the partnership donkey.
Yes, that was one of the great lines in it. The reason why employers are not entitled to sue is that employers are not likely to be susceptible to the prohibited discriminatory practices. So that was one of the things that Sidley and Austin talked about, is what's the reason behind this? And the reason is the people who are running the place are not likely to be susceptible to the those practices. There's no authority for the argument that's made here that there should be a different test in terms of finding out who can sue as opposed to counting employees for purposes of jurisdiction and coverage. There's simply no law, no case, which supports that proposition. And of course, fundamentally, since the court is engaged in statutory construction, there is only one definition of employee within the statute itself.
Mr. Reagan, do you think there's any reason why this panel ought to wait and see what the Supreme Court does in the Clackamas case before we decide?
I've thought about that question, and my main answer is, far be it for me to give this court the advice on how it would conduct its business. It's obviously an option for the court. I have no position on it other than that, really. I mean, it's clearly a matter for decision.
Very much on point. I mean,
very much on point.
With that, yes.
It's very much there. I would say that our main point, the Ottawa Medical Center, although this is a fascinating debate, which has got more fascinating on Thursday when Judge Wood participated in that opinion, we're here seeking affirmance of a summary judgment in our favor. And although I enjoy the opportunity to participate in the debate, we have a practical solution here. And so whatever the court decides to do to most practically bring this thing to an end is what we would like to see happen. And fundamentally, under any test, short of one, under any test that's been applied in what I think Judge Easterbrook called this welter of cases, under any test, we prevail. I mean, clearly Dr. Schmidt was one of the people who was running the place. The facts matter. There were 8 shareholders and no more. They all participate equally in voting on the key determinations. Dr. Schmidt has been an officer. He is currently a shareholder and a director, I should say. He has an equal opportunity with everyone else to participate in the key votes, including what he is interested here, and that is the question of compensation. In Dowd, this court looked to the operation of the partnership, to the operation of a closely held corporation to see whether it looked like a partnership. And we have documented this record with facts. We have not simply come in and said that we're a closely held corporation. Ipso facto, we win. We've put the facts in before the case. There is only, one outcome of Wells in the Supreme Court, which would cause us to lose. And that would be a simple declaration that state law labels matter exclusively and trump all other outcomes. And that, as Judge Wood pointed out, in Sidley and Austin, the court engaged in a functional analysis, and Wells versus Clackamas did not. Highland, which was the Second Circuit opinion, did not engage in functional analysis either. And I respectfully suggest that it is unlikely that the Supreme Court would, in interpreting this important federal statute, say that federal policy doesn't matter and we will simply look to the label. But in that regard, I think it is very important to realize that the plaintiff here has not asked for a Wells or a Highland, the Second Circuit, absolute labeling exercise. He says look to the reality, and he picks different realities. And the Sidley case says, well, we have to decide which realities matter. But he doesn't say, simply because there is a corporation here, that he wins, that he is necessarily an employee because of that fact. So he doesn't even go so far as the ultimate way in which Wells or Highland would go. So in conclusion, and of course certainly had a long morning here, that when any test other than a mere label is applied, then this shareholder, with respect to this professional corporation, is clearly functioning as a partnership. And this court's made it clear that that's the test in looking at the functional analysis. We would, unless the court has questions, we would respectfully ask that the district court, Judge Bucklow, be affirmed. Thank you, Mr. Ray.
Mr. Garrison?
Your Honor, of course I haven't sought to argue the position of that's been taken with regard to the Second Circuit or the Ninth Circuit. I recognize I'm arguing in the Seventh Circuit, and until the Supreme Court in Clackamas resolves the conflict between the circuits, I think that probably the issues in this case might well be decided by the Supreme Court. I for one would not be presumptive to tell Your Honors what to do with regard to the case, but I have to tell you that my advice to my client was to anticipate, given the grant of certiorari, that you would probably delay your decision in this matter until the Clackamas decision came down. I certainly would anticipate that that is a possibility, and I certainly would not want to predict what the Supreme Court would do. I think there are two very good arguments on either side, and I recognize that I'm in the Seventh Circuit and that you have made your decisions based on the functionality test, and I've sought to use facts to try and distinguish the EEOC versus Dowd case.
Thank you, Mr. Garrison. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. The court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow morning.